It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Welcome everyone to Owlpost as it is freshly delivered this week. I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and my illustrious co-host is also here. How are you doing, Drea?
Hi, everyone. I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing well. I'm excited, as always, to be here to be talking some more Harry Potter. I think it's going to be a thumping good time tonight.
We're good at the puns.
Yes. Before we kind of dig into our chapter, The Whomping Willow, this week, you know, there's a lot of different places that you can find us, interact with us, and we'd love to have some interaction. We like talking to the fans. One of the best places on Twitter, at Join Nerd Party, is a great place to catch up with us. Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty is a great place. We post the shows there. Interact with us under those show posts. Let us know what you think. You can also find us on the website at TheNerdParty.com with all the other shows we do. And a really nice place where you can give us some interaction that helps other people find the shows is on Apple Podcasts. Hit subscribe there and also give us a star rating review. Help other people find the show while they're searching in iTunes for Harry Potter podcasts. And lastly, if you would like to have a more long-form conversation with us, you want to send us an email, you can go to thenerdparty.com/contact. And then choose a show, choose Owlpost, and that'll come to us. And so, Drea, The Whomping Willow is just a fun chapter, I think. And it makes me sad, though, at the beginning, because, you know, Harry is talking about, in his mind, he's thinking how this has been the happiest month of his life living at the Burrow, which is kind of sad to think of. But also how jealous he feels of Ron. Like, it's very interesting because there are parts of the series where Ron is very jealous of Harry. But it's interesting to see that Harry's jealousy is much more deep-rooted. And it's harder for Ron to see how blessed he is with the family he has because you kind of just don't think about how important that is. But Harry understands it. He gets it.
Yeah, it's the whole, and it's almost like a cruel joke that they have to keep going back to the Burrow before they make it to the train station. Several times they have to go back, and every time I just imagine Harry gets like slightly happier, and then it's even worse every time they leave. So I can't imagine. I mean, we've all sort of felt that way, that irrational jealousy that you know no one else will ever understand, but. Yeah, I. It's such a different type of jealousy that isn't like the green-eyed monster jealousy that we see later in Ron, but it's still pretty heartbreaking to see and know that he's just like dreading going back to Privet Drive.
It's almost kind of like just a heart pain, you know. Like there's a deep hurt in Harry in that sense. Like he understands there's something very much missing in his life, and it's this feeling of family and safety and comfort and love and joy that comes from having safety and comfort and all of those things. Now, the Weasleys might be crammed into this house, but there's the comfort and the love and the joy that comes from being taken care of and completely known and loved that Harry just has never had. And I just love the way in which the story really works so well. I think the way that she tells it with, I don't know, I can just feel what Harry's feeling there. And it's a painful feeling, really.
I never understood, and it's explained later why he has to go back to Privet Drive every summer. But I never understood, without Harry knowing that, why he felt like he had to go back to Privet Drive every summer.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts here, and there was never an introduction where anybody told him that or asked him that. It just is what he just naturally assumes, is he's going to have to go back. And I always found that such an interesting concept, and I'm curious to see as we progress through the series if that's ever sort of addressed, that he does have to go back to his aunt and uncle, or if there's no good reason why he couldn't just stay with the Weasleys the entire summer or somewhere else or what. So, yeah, that makes it even more heartbreaking, and it makes it honestly a little confusing for me. So
I can't remember when that happened, so call me a bad Harry Potter fan, yell at me online on Twitter, I'm sure you will, fans. But yeah, it's something that I don't quite remember exactly when they explain that, but
it's not until the last time he goes back to Privet Drive at like either the beginning of book 6 or 7. It's literally the last interaction where he ever sees the Dursleys beyond seeing Dudley later in life.
Yeah, which is great in the sense that what does happen throughout the other books after this is that he does go to the Burrow every year and the holidays. Like, he doesn't have to stay at Privet Drive the whole time. He doesn't end up having to stay.
He just goes there during the summer, like during the break between school.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So, yeah, I think the other fun thing about this chapter is that we get more of the car.
Yeah.
And I love the ways in which Mr. Weasley has really upgraded his car. Like, all of the kids in the family can fit in it. And, like, wouldn't it be awesome to have a trunk that just grew to whatever size you needed it?
Well, I love how Mrs. Weasley's just so trusting, too. She's like, oh, you never know. Is this big from the outside? And you're like, it's because it's not.
Yeah. Which is funny because it basically makes their Ford Regalia a TARDIS.
Yeah, basically.
Which I like that she's kind of subtly referencing. I think she's doing it on purpose. Like,
yeah, I think there's a small part of her that's doing that.
It's bigger on the inside, you know? yeah, that's, I love that. And the chapter, it's so interesting because so much of it plays like it does in the movie. And this is the thing that's so interesting. And I love that the boys have this whole thing, you know, because they, like, the way that they think is so one tracked, right? They come up with one solution, but they don't think of anything else because they're about to be 12, you know? That's not how their minds work, but they can't get through the barrier. What do we do? How do we get to school? And, like, the first thing that comes to their mind is, like, the car.
We'll just take the car. Which I find so dumb. Like, why don't you just wait and tell your parents what happened? There has got to be a way that if you miss the train, that your parents, like, have to drive you there or something. But, like, you know that there's another way for these kids to get to school. And maybe it's our adult logic kicking in, being like, oh, there's a way to problem solve this. But, like, you're just like, and it comes up later in the chapter, like, why didn't you just tell somebody?
Like, well, and that's, why did that's you just do that? Thing, because they do a little bit of, like, 12-year-old logic. Well, if we can't get through the barrier, what if our parents can't get back out? Like, what do we do? Like, and that's where the car comes in. It's like, so there is a slight bit of logic that's happening. You know, they thought about, okay, we could just wait for the parent, you know, the Mr. and Mrs. Weasley to come back. But at the same time, well, but what if they can't get out? What if they're stuck? What do we do then? Like, we don't have anybody to call. It's not, you know, can't call Ghostbusters.
Not thinking that they could contact anybody at school. Like, why would we do that?
Yes, absolutely. You know, I really, it's so much fun because the way she writes the chapter, you know, they get in the car and they're flying and it's like the best thing ever, you know, and
And then 2 hours go by and they're like, maybe not. It's like the first time a kid takes a road trip. This is so fun. And then an hour and they're like, are we done yet?
Yeah. Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Well, and it's funny too, because, you know, you kind of, when we think of flying, you know, we don't really think of the particulars, and it doesn't seem like their car has air conditioning. And so, you know, you're flying above the clouds and the sun is right there. It just gets hot and they're like sweaty and like it's not enjoyable. They don't have any water. You know, they're used to being on the Hogwarts Express where Harry can buy them treats and stuff, you know. And I think it's that thing where she gives you the sense of joy that it is to be in a flying car. But then the reality kicks in, and reality bites.
Yeah. 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 And
which is kind of fun, because she lets you have a good time for a little bit before she kicks that in. And yeah, it's wonderful. And so I really liked that we're not just in a, like, that was one of the things in this book too that really helped. We're not just in a fantasy world. You know, we're in a real world, in the sense that, yeah, you're in a flying car, it's cool, but it's gonna get really hot up there, and then it's gonna get cold as the sun starts to go down, and just like, she thought through all of that stuff, and I just, it's one of those things where I'm like, wow, way to go, JK.
Yeah, it is. It's really interesting, and it's really smart how she does it. And it's subtle. She doesn't, you know, spend half a book walking you through it. You know, she just every once in a while gives you a reality check. The flying in a, that driving in a flying car might not be as much fun as you think it is.
And apparently it's not. Apparently it's not. So it's good to know that we were right. But and then, of course, they get to school finally and they land in the worst possible place ever. A tree that wants to kill them.
Well, it's like all of a sudden the car starts crashing and they're like, what's happening?
Well, yeah. And like, OK, what I like is that they've been flying for a really long time and they're excited about that, but then that the car starts to do that thing where it's kind of like sputtering and it's making noises, and they're trying to ignore that fact, but then it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. I don't know if you've ever had a car like that where you're just like trying to ignore the problem just so you can get home.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what they're trying to do, and then of course they crash into a tree that is very interesting because it's kind of a murderous tree.
I like the way Ron puts it. Of course, we land in the one tree that will hit us back.
Yeah, exactly.
We hit the one tree that will hit back. Like,
exactly. Oh man,
what are the odds of that?
Well, and then of course you get the awfulness of Ron just having his wand snap, and it's just, oh, that poor kid. He just cannot catch a break.
Well, and I had kind of forgotten. I mean, that's a big part of the book and of the movie. And for some reason, I'd forgotten that happens, and it happened. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's terrible. Oh, yeah, I forgot how horrible that is. And especially now that she's really driven home the fact that, like, they just can't afford to buy him a new one either. Was like, oh, it's even worse now. It's even worse.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is even worse. And it's very funny because, you know, the car... they get them out of the tree, they back away from it, and they're like, oh, whew. And then the next moment they are flown out of the car and flung out of the car by the car, and then it runs away, and Ron's like, oh crap, my dad's gonna kill me.
Yeah, which would be everyone's thought at that point.
Absolutely.
You stole the car and took it with you to Hogwarts. At what point were you not like, oh, well, I'm never gonna get my dad his car back?
Like, yes, yes.
This plan just was not well thought through at all.
No, absolutely not. Not at all. And it's also funny, too, because, you know, she breaks in with reality again when the boys are a little disappointed when they're like, this kind of isn't the triumphal arrival that we thought of. You know, like they thought they were going to land and everybody's going to be like, look how awesome they are. And
I almost felt like they were more like they were going to land and no one was going to notice. Like they were going to land and go back into the hall and everyone's going to be like, hey, where you been? And like that was going to be the end of it. Like no one was going to think twice. But you landed a car in Hogwarts.
Yep.
What did you think was going to happen?
And I love that they're like trying to sneak into the castle and they like get up there and they finally get to the Great Hall and they're about to, and they're talking about, wait, I don't see Snape. Where's Snape? And of course, very like, you know, horror movie, like he's waiting right behind them.
Very Snape-like. He's just waiting for them.
Oh gosh. Well, and of course he reams them out for, you know, flying a flying car. And allowing muggles to see it, and he is so mad at them, and then it just kind of progressively get, like, I don't know if they thought it could get worse than Snape, but then it gets worse because McGonagall comes in, and, like, it just keeps ramping up the awfulness of what happens to them.
Yeah, and then Dumbledore comes in, and it's, like, even worse. Like, Harry comments that he wishes he would just yell at him because it would be better than what's actually happening to them right now.
That's the thing that I really liked about this chapter was the way, you know, I was really struck by how Dumbledore for Harry is that parent who he does not want to disappoint. And Harry doesn't have to even be yelled at by Dumbledore to know when he's done something that displeases him. And Dumbledore is the kind of parent who could just look at Harry with that look, and like that's the discipline he needs. And I think what's interesting is that that's why Dumbledore doesn't expel them this time, because I think he understands that about Harry, and I think Dumbledore gets that if we handle it this way, this isn't going to be something that Harry does again.
Well, and not just that, it's not really his choice, like. It's, you know, it is McGonagall's choice. And while he could probably sway her one way or the other, that's also part of just his leadership style, right? Is to just let her handle it how she feels she wants to handle it. And, mm-hmm. you know, that's what it is.
Yes. Yes.
I feel like McGonagall has learned to trust them. She trusts that they felt like this was their only and their best choice. And while logically she can tear it apart until kingdom come, she knows that they didn't do this maliciously or for glory. Like, she probably genuinely believes that they couldn't get on the train and they didn't know what to do and they panicked and did this. And that she doesn't want to punish them, because whilst a muggle saw and it can get covered up, nobody got hurt. There was no malicious intent. Like, they can learn from their mistakes, and they've shown in the past that they generally will learn from their mistakes. So I think that there was a benefit of the doubt given there by McGonagall, and that had it been any number of other students that don't show the same traits, that she might have gone ahead and expelled them. But she does let them know they're on very thin ice now. So
mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's a really... Like, I think that's a really neat thing. You can see the way in which she's such a great teacher, you know. And I think that's one of the things that obviously sets, I think it sets Dumbledore and McGonagall apart in the sense that, you know Snape is just vindictive against Harry. And as much as McGonagall and Dumbledore may not like certain students, they're not vindictive against them. You know, that's right. You know, they try to treat them as fairly as possible. And I think that's something that really is important about the series. And it's one of those things that we're gonna see play out with Harry and Snape throughout the rest of the books. And it's kind of sad that it kind of is that way. But it's just, you know, it's unfortunate that Snape kind of can't get over things, you know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of a downfall of him, because as much as I end up having a real affection for Snape,
he's very flawed.
He is very flawed, but I think that's also important, you know?
Yeah.
So it's something that I like that she just doesn't shy away from. And that's really important. Is yeah. to not to allow people's flaws to truly be seen.
Yes.
So and that's a good thing, you know, because we kind of need to see those things about ourselves, really.
Yeah, and it's nice that they just sort of, you know, they let him be, and they know that there's more going on than anyone can kind of relate to, you know? So they also see that genuine kindness in him, whether some of his decisions are based on sound judgment or not is questionable. But, you know, some of the feelings they have, they know why he's making the decisions and acting the way they is, which doesn't explain things, but at least it provides them some context to the situation. And they kind of let Snape be Snape, you know? Plus, I don't think they truly understand some of the interactions that they have, so.
It's very true. I do think it is very funny the way in which McGonagall deals with the situation.
Potter. She makes the meat sandwiches alone?
No.
Oh.
You have an owl.
Yeah.
Why didn't you just send an owl?
Yeah.
Like, I really, really love that she just makes them think, and they're like, oh, we didn't think of that. And then she's like, oh, obviously. And so I think that's just, it's very funny. And I think what you pointed out just a little bit ago, and it's right on target, is that McGonagall realizes they're 12 and this wasn't malicious, you know? I mean, it just wasn't. And that's why they get impressed the severity of what they've done by Dumbledore and basically don't do that S again, in kinder words. So I think it's really good. So,
yep, I agree. I also like that she makes meat sandwiches alone, though. That makes me laugh.
Absolutely. Well, and it's one of those things too. Like and Ron actually is really smart because he figures it out why she doesn't want them, you know, barging into the Great Hall. She doesn't want people glorifying what they did, which is kind of funny because they get into their common room and that's what everybody does anyway.
Right, and they get in there and they cheer anyway, but whatever. At least it made it appear that she was trying to be honest, she's trying to be fair with everybody, right? I'm not going to let them come and make a big hoopla in front of everybody because I know you guys are going to clap and we don't want to piss off the Slytherins and everyone else, so...
Yeah,
you do you, and we'll just make it happen later.
Yeah, no, that's really funny to me, and I liked it because they get specifically into their dormitory, and all the boys are like, "Y'all are awesome," and Harry and Ron are like, they just can't help but smile, like, "Yeah, we kind of are."
Well, I really like though that before that happens, they run into Hermione, who basically they describe as reacting like McGonagall does. And you're like, yeah, that's not surprising. Okay, people are going to be angry. And then they go in the room and then everyone, they have that big cheer and blah, blah, blah. And you're like, oh, that's just funny.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's a fun chapter. And it's kind of it's a very quick chapter as well. You know, that's what happens in it. We know there isn't much more to the chapter than that. But now they're finally back at Hogwarts and we get to really start to dig in to the rest of the series. Oh, and by the way, Ginny is a Gryffindor.
Yes. Yay, Ginny. I don't think there was ever any doubt in my mind, though.
No. Not with that family.
Yeah.
Not at all.
I do like how this chapter ends a lot. It, you know, a lot of them will end on cliffhangers or something like that. And this chapter just very simply ends with, you know, them talking to Seamus and Dean Thomas and Neville in their dorm room, and it ends with like Harry couldn't help it, he grinned too, like he was just, it ends on such a happy, inspiring note after such a kind of a crappy day, and him feeling what he was feeling at the beginning of the chapter about leaving and having to go back. So it was nice that we sort of ended on a kinder or a more pleasant note than we sort of start the chapter.
No, and what the wonderful thing is about it is, you know, he's going from one home to another, really, you know, like, and as sad as he was to leave the Weasleys, this is clearly his home as well. Hogwarts will always be a place that Harry feels like he's at home. And it starts off with a, you know, next week when we dive back in, we'll be talking about Gilderoy Lockhart again. So, I mean, this book has hit the ground running. I'm so excited to be in it and really digging in now as we're going to start getting into the meat of the book. And I can't wait to continue talking about it with you, Drea. But if anybody wants to talk a little more Harry Potter or anything else with you, where could they find you on the interwebs?
So you can crash your virtual car.
Or, excuse me, the Acromantula webs.
You can crash your virtual car into my tree that won't hit you back on Twitter at PCFcheck or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's C-O-F-F-M-A-N.
Well, you can come by for some digital sandwiches over on Twitter at MattRushing02 or on Instagram at MRushing, where I might actually take a picture of food. Then you'll find
No, it's usually drinks for you. Yours is the whiskeys and mine is the food.
Well, I like to take a picture of a good burger.
That is true.
So, I mean, what can I say? I love a good burger. You can also find me here on the network doing aggressive negotiations with John Mills as we talk about Star Wars every week. I hope you'll dig into that show with us. And then I'm over on the Nerd Party Network. You can find me talking Deep Space Nine with Chris Jones on The Orb. And I'm doing the General Geek Show, the 602 Club, which we talk about everything we can under the sun in our favorite fandoms. So make sure you check all of those out. Well, thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.